Travel with Rick Steves is brought to you by American Airlines, with 4,000 flights to 250 cities in some 40 countries around the world every day. It's easy to book your next flight at AA.com. American Airlines knows why you fly. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. And right now, let's think ahead a little bit about retirement and retiring specifically in Mexico. I've got a couple of people with me who are really the experts in traveling in Mexico and also retiring in Mexico, Carl Franz and Lorena Havens. They wrote way back in 1972 the first edition of what is the classic guide to Mexico, the People's Guide to Mexico. Right now they're living sort of a rugged life up in the Mount Baker area of Northwest Washington when they're not down in Mexico. Carl and Lorena, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks.
Great to be here,
Rick.
It's good to see you guys again. I've got to say, I know Carl and Lorena from back in the early 1980s when I was first published. We had the same publisher, John Muir. John Muir wrote the original How to Keep Your Volkswagen book alive, right? Idiot's Guide to Volkswagen Maintenance.
And I remember seeing you under the stairwell in the local high school at the book fair. Remember that?
Here in Edmonds. That's where we met.
That's right.
The book fair.
And I said, I need a publisher. And you guys said, we've got a good one. And you guys were right. So I've focused on Europe and you focused on Mexico, and it's great to have you here. And right now, that was actually like 25 years ago, so let's talk about retirement. Not for us, but there's a lot of people that like to retire in Mexico. Paint a picture, Americans retiring in Mexico. What is it that's so appealing to them?
Well, I think the first thing that's really appealing, and this might sound a little odd, but is that it is not the United States. It's really quite a foreign country, but it's so close. It's so easily accessible. It's affordable, but I don't think that's a primary reason that most people go. It shouldn't be.
Right. I mean, you can get seduced by the fact that, oh, you can get a maid for $150 a month or something, but that wouldn't be the driving consideration.
No, and people who go with that kind of motivation usually don't last. They often get frustrated.
So what motivation really is the good, solid reason to retire in Mexico?
I think you have to fall in love with Mexico. I think that's the basis of it. If you're not comfortable living with Mexicans, literally, on all sides of you and having contact with Mexicans day in and day out, you simply aren't going to make it, or you're going to retire to one of what we call the kind of gringo fortresses, a gringo enclave, and have minimum contact with Mexicans. And people do that, but that's not a happy way to live.
Well, I bet there's a lot of that. You see that in many parts of the world where people are just going for the sunshine. And if they happen to be finding the sunshine in a less developed part of the world, they'll build a wall around them and create a little synthetic bit of America.
Yeah, and they do it here in the United States in completely protected little environments.
Okay, so the ideal retirement situation in Mexico would be then connecting with the local culture.
Yeah, I call it the best of both worlds. Go to a place where you're comfortable, where there are enough services to satisfy your gringo needs, and don't try to be a Mexican, but simply get along well in Mexico.
And then once you're there, travel. One of the things that we really recommend for people is that they don't just go down, buy a place, and move in. You know, rent a house, maybe stay for a few months, talk to people, try living somewhere else, or else if you do end up with a house in one place, then plan to travel, go off for a few months. If it gets too hot, go to the beach. If it gets too cold, you know, go to another coastline. Get to know the whole country. You know, actually do some traveling. Enjoy the place.
I'm talking with Carl Franz and Lorena Havens, the authors of The People's Guide to Mexico. It's in its new 13th edition. And you guys have spent a good part of your adult life in Mexico. On average, over the last 30 years, how many days a year would you say you've been in Mexico?
Well, first of all, I'd say it's not a good part. It's the best part of our adult life.
But for the last 35 years, we figure we've spent at least half the time down there.
Half the time there. And you're talking about don't try to be a Mexican, but try to fit with Mexico or enjoy Mexico or be in
we are who we are.
With Mexico,
you know,
yeah.
There's no way to change the fact that we're gringos. We're from the States. We have more money than most of the people down there, though certainly not than everyone. And if you try to pretend that you aren't that way, then you're really raising barriers.
That must be kind of obnoxious if somebody goes down there and actually tries to become a Mexican when obviously they're not. They've got to, like, they can go home when they want to get their American fix and so on.
Yeah, and it's just not necessary. I think it's really important to make a serious effort to learn some Spanish so that you can speak with your neighbors. When you go down to the corner store, you can exchange pleasantries to get beyond the absolute essentials and learn to have at least minimum conversations, and that will make you much more comfortable about living there. One of the frustrating things for gringos living in Mexico is that it isn't the United States, and things are basically different. People really do have different attitudes about time, about commitments. Doing what we consider an ordinary thing here, like paying your light bill, can be something of an adventure in Mexico.
And that's one unique thing about your guidebook. Carl and Lorraine have written this book, which is the classic Mexico, sort of originally the Hippie's Guide to Mexico, but it's grown up in 30 years, and it is the classic cultural insight to Mexico. It doesn't list places as much as how to understand and connect with the culture. So I would think anybody thinking of retiring in Mexico, they could learn a lot about what they're getting in for by just reading this book.
Yeah, I think our book is really as much about living in Mexico as it is about traveling in Mexico. And when we wrote the book, we were living in Mexico, and we intended to live there indefinitely.
And it was also aimed at people who were traveling for like 6 months at a time. It wasn't aimed at the person flying down for the weekend. And so that's the basic premise, is you're living there and traveling, basically the nomad traveler. And that there's still a very large community of nomads traveling around Mexico.
Let me just go more practically for a moment, just on the issues of retiring, whether you're going to be in a gringo enclave or you're going to be going native or whatever, you know. But we'll stay out of that issue, because in practice, a lot of Americans want to go down there and live on a humble retirement and live well in the sunshine. So let's just talk a little bit about practical. First of all, costs involve. People are going to go down there hoping that they've got a retirement that they're not comfortable with here, but it is their retirement. They can have a better quality of life potentially in Mexico with X amount of dollars.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You can spend just as much money in Mexico as you do here in the United States or Canada, and many people do. I've had, for example, letters from people saying, can I live in Mexico on $5,000 a month? Yes, you can spend $5,000 a month, but can you live on $1,000 a month? Absolutely. For example, the apartment that Lorena and I lived in was what we considered the high end of our budget, was $300 a month, a very nice little apartment in a beautiful little kind of an old hacienda. So you can go as low as $100 a month, but the problem with going below, say, $200 or $300 a month is that if you don't speak Spanish, it's going to be very hard to find those bargains.
Okay, but if you've got $1,000 a month, you don't speak Spanish, but you're reasonably adept at these issues, you can eat and sleep okay in
Mexico.
Can
get by. I mean, like, we had friends who were renting houses for a couple $1,000 a month. We had a good deal, and we sort of looked forward a bit. It isn't necessarily you're going to go down there and find the best deals. But if you can have the time to be able to stay for a month or two and look around, you can really find nice places.
What motivations are there other than simply stretching your retirement dollar? I mean, people go down there for health reasons?
Well, absolutely. But also, Rick, I just want to say that we get a lot of letters from people who say, I just am tired of the American way of life. I'm retiring. I want to get out of it. I want to find somewhere else to live, a different way to live.
And what would the key differences then would be? Just not as aggressive, slow
it's
down.
It's so less stressful. When we fly to Mexico and get off the plane, and as soon as we get out of a taxi or off of a bus, we heave a sigh of relief. You're not bombarded by the media that we have here, the materialism. I mean, it's happening in Mexico, especially in the bigger cities. But the Mexican way of life is much more family-oriented. It's much more friend-oriented. People will spend half of Sunday just simply eating lunch, and it's considered weird to run into a restaurant, eat, and then run out. So that pace of life changes everything in a very basic sense, but you have to experience it to really understand it.
You can't know if you like it until you actually do it.
No,
really.
Absolutely not.
Anybody can say, I want to slow it down, but you can get down there and it could drive you nuts probably.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of alcoholism based on that very fact. A lot of people get down there, they don't know. They don't really figure out another way to live, and they just sit home and drink.
Really? So let's talk reality check here, because you stress in your book, don't burn bridges. This paradise might disappoint you. Imagine you could feel like a minority in that society, couldn't you?
Absolutely. For men, especially men who have been successful in the United States in business or in their job, one of the biggest frustrations is they think they can fix Mexico. if I only had, give me four guys and a bulldozer and a pair of vice grips, and I will make this town work. And they go nuts.
Oh, I had that in India. I wanted to fix Indian bureaucracy.
And
I had to get over that, or I was going to ruin my
right.
trip to India.
Right.
What about the red tape? Can that be exasperating when you're trying to live down
yeah,
there?
Yeah, it can definitely be exasperating. But there again, say you go to a community where there's a lot of gringos, there'll be people who can help you with it. We finally got some of our FM3s,
FM3, it's a higher level of visa, a resident alien kind of visa.
And there was a lot of paperwork, but there was a woman lawyer who took care of it for us.
So you can hire a local lawyer to help sort through this.
For things like that,
to help
sure.
you function in a Mexican bureaucracy that can be overwhelming for an American expatriate. Now, are there pitfalls in that regard for real estate purchase that you would want to hire a lawyer or you could really find yourself blowing a lot of money?
The big thing to do in Mexico in terms of real estate is use the same kind of caution that you would use in the United States. People fall in love with Mexico. They go a little crazy and that pink cloud honeymoon sort of atmosphere, and they might put down money so quickly and then have tremendous regret about it. So do your research thoroughly. And if you feel that you might need an attorney, then by all means use one.
You can naively put down some money and lose it. Actually done there, probably just like here, yeah.
Right, and most real estate is done on cash. There are some mortgages companies starting up now, but basically you pay cash for what you want.
And there would be English-speaking lawyers that you would hire to navigate you through this.
Right.
Okay. I would think it would make sense to rent for a while before you really commit.
And that's our recommendation. We really strongly suggest that no one buy in Mexico until they've lived there for 6 months and preferably a year.
Carl and Lorena, if you're thinking generally about Mexico, and you have a north-south split, right? If you want to be closer to American culture, you would not want to go deep south in Mexico. How does that work?
Right. Actually, Mexico City is kind of the point that we put the north-south dividing line. And north of Mexico City, all the way up to the American border, is much more developed, much more prosperous.
Hmm.
Now, I have to exclude a good chunk of the Yucatan Peninsula because of Cancun and the Caribbean. But southern Mexico is still economically way behind the north. In terms of, let's say, someone who wants to live in Mexico, it's a much longer trip. The connections aren't as good for air travel. The airfares aren't as good. The cheapest place to fly into Mexico always is Mexico City. And flights within Mexico are not inexpensive, although now discount airlines are just coming on. So flying within Mexico, you have to be careful about where you locate if you have to get back to the United States or Canada with any frequency.
So that could be a big financial consideration.
It could be very big.
I was going to say also that's a medical consideration you mentioned earlier, because there's some areas, particularly areas where there are gringo enclaves, that you have very good health care.
Mm-hmm.
Guadalajara area, Mexico City area.
West Coast resorts.
You know, it depends.
Mm-hmm.
There is some, and sometimes it just isn't that good. I'd say that really the bigger areas are Mexico City and Guadalajara for all kinds of health care.
I'd be concerned about political stability. You're buying a place now. You don't know what the story is going to be in 10 years. Wouldn't you say the South has more of a concern that way, or is that not an issue for Mexico these days?
No. I don't consider that I consider that to be an emotional issue, but in practical terms, a non-issue, really.
So we hear about drug shootouts. We hear about guerrillas in the deep south.
Well, there's places. I mean, if you're going down there, I wouldn't want to buy a house near, say, the city of Culiacan. There's a lot of drug shootouts there. You're getting into some of the drug areas. So you'd want to pay attention when you're looking around. You'd talk to people and find out if that is your area.
But nobody's retiring to Culiacan
right. Except
maybe a few cotton farmers. Yeah, it's not a popular area.
Then talk to me about the Colonial Circle. To me, that seems like a nice area.
Yeah, and the advantage of the Colonial Circle is that the elevation is about 5,000 feet for most of the cities, 5,000 to 7,000 feet. So you get a moderate climate. It's not oppressively hot in the summertime. There is so much to do and so many typical Indian markets, museums, lots of cultural things.
And this is the area, it's like a one-day drive in a circle to the east of Guadalajara?
Actually, it's more than a one-day drive. When we did Colonial City tours, it took us 2 weeks.
Really? Okay, but it is the big loop to the west.
It's a big loop.
East of Guadalajara.
It's about a 1,000-mile loop.
And it also has cities that are very popular with gringos and therefore more expensive, say San Miguel de Allende. And you have towns like Morelia that have very few gringos, Pátzcuaro, where you could find much more inexpensive. Hmm.
So some people would prefer San Miguel de Allende just because it would be more comfortable, somebody looking for a moderate sort of immersion in the culture. You'd have more Americans around you, and you'd pay a little more.
Right. And yet another thing about San Miguel is that there is a really strong interaction between the American or the Canadian and the Mexican community, much more than, say, we found in the Lake Chapala area. There was much more segregated. There was very little interaction between the two cultures.
Now, you guys are a couple of old hippies, if I can say that.
Absolutely.
And a lot of us aging hippies, we've drifted away from our ideals, and now we see that we want to go into a new stage in our life and embrace that sort of style a little bit. Are there actually places for aging hippies to go and enjoy hanging out?
Yeah.
Talk about that scene a little bit.
Well, not without, too personally.
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, Mexico has, for example, beaches. Everybody loves a good beach. There are several thousand miles of coastline in Mexico, and we usually only hear about small segments of it. For example, Puerto Vallarta, Mazatlan. But what's in between? A lot. Quite a lot. What's in between Acapulco and Puerto Vallarta? Another huge chunk with just scattered foreigners here and there. And then go across the country to the Gulf of Mexico. Now, if you can handle the occasional pouring rain shower, because it's quite wet there, but beautiful beaches and, you know, very, very few tourists.
And no promotional budgets.
No, no promotional budgets.
No people earning their living selling condos.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So you find that and you find just a humble little village like right on the beach and you can hang out there quite reasonably.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a good scene.
It is, and there's a lot of people as you get there. I mean, it's not like you're driving to town and you necessarily see a big tourist center, but if you spend any time there, you'll find a lot of people sort of stuck back in corners who've been living there for years and years and have really made, you know, a lifestyle out of living in a small place.
So there's a lot of alternatives, really. I mean, a world of choices, from a condo with an ocean view right across from Senor Frogs.
Yeah.
And then there are also the traveling people, the people that go down for 6 months or for 6 years in a van.
In an RV or a van.
A camper. And a lot of them have favorite beaches. They go back to the same place every year, stay there for 6-8 months, and drive back up north again.
So my parents go down to Palm Desert Hot Springs or Palm Springs area in Southern California, and it's like an RV community of, what do you call them, snowbirds.
Mm-hmm.
You could actually go a few hundred miles further south and find yourself in similar trailer parks and so on with American expats enjoying Mexico.
Oh, absolutely.
Talk about that.
Before we get there, I want to just say we were talking about beaches, but that represents about 1% of the country. 99% of Mexico, and I would say 90% of Mexico in general, is not really visited by gringos.
Hmm.
So just look at a map and get as far away as you can from the nearest city, and you're going to find some very interesting places either to visit or even to consider to live for a period of time, not forever. It doesn't have to be the rest of your life.
What's the etiquette for getting hired help and so on when you go down there? It seems like a lot of people, they really like the idea of being retired on a humble retirement, and they can actually employ somebody to do their cleaning for them.
Well, basically, you rent a house, and within a day or two, someone will either be knocking at your door or the person you rented it from will be asking you if you want someone, and they'll help arrange it for you.
And that's pretty straightforward.
Very straightforward.
And you're employing somebody probably fairly well on Mexican standards.
Exactly. Or, you know, you have a choice at that, because there are some people who try to get by as cheap as possible. But in general, Americans, foreigners, Canadians pay better than the Mexicans do. And so they're very glad to work for you. And
what would that cost?
Well, like $150 a month for someone to come in 2 or 3 hours.
Do your shopping, do your cooking, do your cleaning, all
that
stuff.
Do the dishes.
So,
Wednesday was market day, so I went to the market. I love shopping in the markets. I'd come home with bags of food. She'd disinfect it all. She'd clean it up. She'd cook half of it. And we had a refrigerator full of food to eat the rest of the week.
Very nice. You've used the term gringo quite a lot. Is that a respectful term?
It's 40 years ago, when Mexicans used the word gringo, they'd kind of flinch and look at you like, are you going to get upset? It's so common now. And it's particularly popular among gringos.
So you call yourself gringos.
Yeah.
And we're from Gringolandia.
Gringolandia.
Yeah, right.
So not Yankees or Norte Americanos.
No, no. Gringos. We tell our Mexican friends, you know, when we're going to leave, we say, vamos a Gringolandia. We're headed to Gringolandia. And they get a chuckle out of that.
All right. You know, in Merida, that's the big city in the Yucatan, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember these S-shaped benches in the park designed so two people could sit and look at each other and spend time.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Mexico really lends itself to this. You could go down there and just go whichever way the wind blows you and have a magical Mexican experience if you're able to be sensitive to the culture.
And that was the way we traveled. We had no itinerary.
Really?
We were living in a Volkswagen van on very little money, and we got up in the morning, and if we liked the left turn more than the right turn, we took the left turn, and let's see where it leads us.
I think the classic example, we ran out of money, and we were getting ready to head home. We were in Guatemala, and we were at Lake Atitlan, and it's a long, windy road up to the top. And on the way up, I cast the I Ching, and it said, go south. And so we turned south and went over to the Yucatan, wrote home for money, long story. It took months and months to get there. We got down to, we had enough money for a little jar of instant coffee. Carl was trading fish to the local little restaurant for rice and beans. You know, we were down there for another year before we got home.
That was probably back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this year, can kids go over there, or kids, young at heart people at any age, go over there, and can you still find that magic?
Well, there's a lot of changes, but we just recently got a letter, put it up on the website, from a guy who's traveling just like we did back in the early 70s.
Isn't that encouraging and almost inspirational? I know for myself, I kind of have these great memories of when I was a kid. And now, one generation later, I get emails from people who go over there on the same shoestring budget and the same no reservations, let's just immerse ourselves in the wonder of it all. And it can still be done in this otherwise quite high-powered and conformist sort of travel world.
Yeah, and Rick, I have to say, if you want to feel your age, we get emails now from people who say, my parents or my grandparents read me this book when I was a child and we were traveling in Mexico, and now I'm using it to travel
it
the same
works.
Way they did.
And it still works. That's
and
the
it
thing.
Still works.
I've been talking with two gringo friends of mine, Carl Franz and Lorena Havens. They are the co-authors of The People's Guide to Mexico, that lovers of Mexico have long considered the classic guide to Mexico. Carl and Lorena, thank you so much for your insight into retiring in Mexico.
Thanks,
great
Rick.
To be
good
here,
to see
Rick.
You again.
Travel with Rick Steves is brought to you by American Airlines. With their new Advantage Award booking tool, it's easier than ever to book to over 800 Advantage Award destinations online at aa.com. American Airlines knows why you fly.